Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hey, I'm going to start with an apology because Richard asked me, when you record your intro, make sure you're somewhere where it's not windy and it's quiet. I'm pretty sure it's quite windy and I'm also out by a road, so I think I failed on both instructions, which leads me in turn to an apology to you because maybe this sounds really horrible in your ears. I'm sorry about that, but oh my goodness, I'm having one of those days where I'm just running around like an absolute lunatic all day. I don't know what it is about. I've got birthdays this weekend, right? They're not surprises. A birthday comes around on the same day every year. And yet, I find myself always never really any more prepared each year. I always get the basics sorted, but I leave a lot of things to the last minute and it's exhausting. I don't recommend it. So I'm walking home back to my house. I've already been out today to get extra helium. It's Sunny's 17th birthday today, and when I did the helium, the canister had only had a tiny amount in it, and I didn't know that. So the 1 was really brilliant and significant, and the 7 just looked very sad. So it was like 17. So I went to the party shop, and then I'm now walking back to the house with 2 cakes in a bag. I used to bake cakes in the olden days, but quite frankly, I don't have enough time right now. So I got some cakes, and then I just remembered that Ray, who is 9 on Sunday, so that's only a day off. They have 1 day off, and then it's back into another birthday. He said, oh, can I have a How to Train Your Dragon and Harry Potter cake? So, of course, I was like, yeah. I think I pictured myself making some sort of fondant Harry Potter riding a dragon or something. But I'm not really going to do that. I'm not really that person. So now I've just seen what I can order on Prime. Oh, Richard is going to kill me. It is so noisy and so windy. It's a beautiful day. Oh my God, it's so busy. Anyway, this is the last episode in this series. Woo! Pop some virtual champagne, why don't you? I think this is actually really quite good. I've done 30 of these bad boys now, and I've loved it. Oh my goodness, I've loved it. And check me out, I've even recorded the first one of the series 4, because I'm that sort of podcast expert now. Anyway, this week's guest, oh, what a lovely woman, Tina Crawford, one of only two people thus far to nominate themselves. And ordinarily, you might think, well, you know, what's interesting about you, per se, but except that both people... Oh, I'm going through lots of noise now. All the schools are chucked out. Anyway, she nominated herself, and she's one of two, and the other person to nominate herself was also an artist, and Tina is an artist. So I think maybe when you're an artist, there's part of you that just has to put yourself out there, even though afterwards she sort of said, oh, I actually ramble a lot, but she doesn't. She speaks a lot of sense. And I was really intrigued in talking to Tina. I just knew she'd be interesting. We first came to know about each other. Well, I first came to know about her in the here and now because she's been making free embroidery pieces in a reaction to lockdown. But actually, that is not the first time we met. We first met when I was 18 and she worked as a researcher on This Morning. You will hear more about this later. Oh, I'm walking past some beautiful blossom. Wow, that is gorgeous. Anyway, Tina had so much to talk about. She's a disabled mother and spoke about her disability and how her baby boy instinctively knew how to cling on to her in a way that he didn't cling on to his dad because he could sort of sense the limitations or the adaptations that were necessary for how they interacted in that way. We talked about art. We talked about overcoming challenges. We spoke about what it's like to raise a precociously bright child. Her boy has a very high IQ. Spoke about loads of stuff. I really enjoyed her company, and she brought over a birthday present of an embroidered vision of me. I have to say, she's rather wonderful. She looks better in her leotard than I do. I really like her. I'll have to show you a picture of her. Anyway, we had a lovely chat, and it was a really lovely way to finish this series. So thank you, Tina. Thank you to you. Sorry about the noise, sorry about the wind, but you know, it's just been one of those days, so thank you for walking me home with my two cakes on the actual birthday. I mean, am I ever going to get this stuff right? There are people out there so organised, they've booked restaurants in pubs like in the middle of May. Who are these people? I don't know them, I'm not that woman. But if you are, well done, you're nailing it, quite frankly. I'm the sort of person who buys birthday cake on the birthday. Yeah, and the sort of person who doesn't make a fondant How to Train Your Dragon riding a Harry Potter other way around. Now that would be a birthday present. Anyway, thank you for lending me yours. See you on the other side. Well, it's really nice to meet you. We haven't actually met in person before, no. Although... might sound a little sinister. You have already dropped things off at my house.
I have met you very long time ago when you think you were doing your first performance with the audience for This Morning.
What? Oh my goodness.
So I'd met you then.
My first performance with the audience. Yeah. So what I must have been like, was like 18. Golly, that's so crazy.
I don't know. It was this morning.
I don't even remember doing This Morning with the audience.
It was a long time ago. I remember it vividly because I can remember the production notes. I think I put something and I got told off by Richard Magley. One of many times I got told off.
Okay, there's a lot to unpick here. Why did you get told off by Richard Magley?
Oh, no, that's just it.
No, don't worry, we don't have to go into that. So I came in, was it to do Pessimist Is Never Disappointed?
Yeah.
Or one of those?
That was it, the production notes, because I'd written... I've already forgotten it the wrong way around. Did I write or the?
Oh.
And he said, which is it? And I think I don't know.
Well, we have
I should have just gone, I'm dyslexic.
Yeah. Get off my case, mate.
Leave me alone.
Well, we did have a lot of very idiosyncratic song titles and everything. So I think you wouldn't be the most annoying thing probably for most people with my band, my first band, was the fact that the audience was spelt as all one word.
That was another one. Because yeah. I'd missed the space. No, I hadn't missed the spacing.
Yeah, you'd written it like a
normal
person.
And then I think I got I'd written it how you'd written it without the spacing.
Yeah.
And I think I got this, what have you done this? And it was probably within the first month of working there. So it was just like literally everything was just like...
Yeah. Well, it was a silly way to spell the band name, so...
Slightly, but then if you spell it correctly, how it's meant to, if you spell it like that, and then you get in trouble for it, and then you're just like, that's how it's, don't blame me, that's how they spell it. So anyway, yes, I'd met you.
did we speak then?
I was a researcher, so I'd sort of come. You seem quite scary. And really quite tall. Well, I was, to be honest, I was just, anybody over 5 foot five scares the life out of me half the time.
That's interesting. I think I was probably scared rather than scary.
You came across
in
as
real
quite
life.
Aloof, I think.
Oh, I used to get that a lot around those days. But I think that era, it's interesting because I was looking back at all that time in my life recently, because I've been writing a book, so I've been looking back. And I think that time for women in music was really quite, it was quite hardcore.
Yeah, yeah.
So you had to kind of keep your guard up quite a lot. I'm not saying, you know, there's never any, I hope I wasn't rude or anything.
No.
But I think I just was quite guarded, really, because I reread some of the interviews and things like that. And the way that I was written about, or women are written about, is just pretty shocking, really. It definitely is something I don't think people would
things
do
have
now.
Changed. Yeah, things have definitely changed quite a bit. But also, I think, from things that I've worked in, it's almost like the younger ones that come in, it's always, there is a different attitude to when somebody's, you know, just at the start of it.
Oh god, yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah, it's true.
That's always the ones where it's the biggest problems, because you're so, you know, you're thinking that there's a way you're supposed to act to make it all happen, and being sort of like friendly, smiley, like high-fiving people makes you feel like they'll probably just be like, why are you doing this?
It's a bit like a kid being invited to like the grown-ups table, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's just that, well, you're acting how you think it's supposed to act, not actually how you are. But yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it's a lifetime ago. It's just an absolute...
I know.
Working for me was just, all of that was just, that's a different person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm trying to get that back.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm trying to get that me back, because I'm thinking it's there, isn't it?
Okay, so you felt like there's a difference in how you felt then. Well, I mean, I feel different about how I was then too, but I don't really want that version of the aloof one.
Well, there's a lot
and it's taller by all counts as well.
One thing that I've kind of noticed, and for me, it's not having a child that's done it, because for 21 years now I've basically been ill, so I was kind of like disabled basically for this time, and I had to give up work. Suddenly, so I was working on something at BBC and collapsed. They sent me home in a cab. That was it. There wasn't the kind of gradual, and I was still getting phone calls whilst it was still going on, because obviously, it took me a long time to come to terms with the fact that that's gone.
Mm.
I mean, like over 10 years, it took me a long, long time. I still kept thinking that I've got that life.
Yeah.
And it's such a change. It's such a change to kind of like go from this, which I loved. I'd wanted to work in TV since I was 15. And I was so lucky to work on the programmes I wanted to work on.
Mm.
I was just so, so, so lucky. And then to suddenly have everything kind of taken away, basically, kind of... It's a similar... what we've had in lockdown. It's a similar thing that everybody's just suddenly had that ripped away. But for me... It just took a long time, because I think when you do something, especially when you work in the media, you also have that feeling of that sometimes your friends are kind of there's a lot of superficialness around it.
Mm.
There's a lot of people that are only a kind of interested in that side of it. So you kind of lose that. Well, I'm not interesting now, am I? I've got nothing. Got absolutely nothing. What have I got now? I literally just lie on the sofa watching programmes I used to work on.
Mm.
And you think, where's the old me gone? Are they still there? I don't know. Then you become a parent, then you become somebody else.
Well, I think as well, if you're doing something you're passionate about and you enjoy, then I think no matter what forum you're in, if you're suddenly not doing that thing anymore, especially at that time in your life, so presumably this is in your 20s, is it?
Yeah, I think I had just... Yeah, late 20s. So late 20s, I just got married, and then we always joked and said, am I allergic to marriage? Because about 6 months in, got married in February, and then the June, it kind of like, something happened. And it's made me a better person, without a doubt. All of that has made me, you know, a better person. I think the old me was really confident in my work.
Mm.
The old me, I knew I was good at it. I was... good at what I did and I enjoyed it, and but I wasn't confident in myself. Whereas now I'm better with myself, not so much confident with my work, but I'm more confident with just being me. So it's just a, which is better? I'd rather be confident with me, I suppose.
Do you think, did any of it prepare you better, do you think, for that? You said your life changes again when you become a parent. Yeah. Do you think that, did it sort of give you any sort of help with that transition?
It kind of did and it didn't, because I think what then happened was you've got a baby. And then it trans. Then you suddenly turn. I hope I wasn't too bad at this. You suddenly, it's all consuming, and then you become that mum. You become the one that all you've got is your child and nothing else. You've got none of yourself. And I was trying to avoid that, but you don't. You can do your best, can't you, to try and avoid it? You just don't know. And friends will probably say, "Yeah, you were really boring." And now you're still.
Sure, they wouldn't.
And Toby's 13, and you're still.
No, I don't think it's boring. I think that feeling of like feeling a bit homogenized, like all your individuality is a bit knocked off because you're sort of suddenly responsible for this other person. You feel like that you're just so defined by that small person. It's very hard to. It's really easy to feel like you've just lost yourself in it.
It is, completely. But then what? The one thing that I do think about having a child is you learn from them who you are, and that's the part that I find. The bad bits and the good bits. I've learnt so much from him just by being him. Kind of like it's such a mirror when you see them do something that you think, when something happens and he just goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. And then I just think, "Oh, God, that's me, isn't it?" And then you have to rein that in. But equally, when you see a sort of lack of cotton, you think, "Okay, you've got that from me." But then there are good bits as well. But it teaches you more so than any other friendship or partnership or any other relationship. I think a child really does teach you who you are. So I value that.
So when he was born, so just so I get a bit of a chronology. So you'd done art when you were young. Is that right?
So I did an art degree. So I went to art college. But the short version is when I was 14, 15, I really wanted to work in TV. So I did used to lie about my age. I did used to get running jobs. I was obsessed with Network 7, which was on Channel 4, and I used to go up there every Sunday, and I thought, this is what I want to do. I used to watch, this is exactly what I want to do, this is it. Got running jobs kind of like part-time, and then I came from a family that was, you kind of left school and you were meant to get a job. A degree was a real luxury, so I had to really fight for doing a degree. My parents didn't want me to do it. There was a big argument about it. And I got to do it, but I had no idea what I was going to do after. I just thought, I'm just thinking about
this
these 3 years. So I went to St Martin's. Yeah, so I did jewellery there. I hate jewellery, but
I wasn't expecting that. I love jewellery.
Really hate jewellery, but to me it was just like mini sculptures. So I thought, I mean, my jewellery was just mini sculptures and toys. So that kind of like was how it went, like that. It's literally just how my mind works. That's how my life is. Like all over.
Stick a pin in something. Land it in jewellery. I'm going to do that now.
But yeah, I think I must have been really feisty to have done it, because I think I look back and I just think, I don't know how I fought to get that. That didn't come. Whereas my husband obviously came from a background that was the dumb thing.
So is he in art as well? No.
But just kind of like going to university. It's quite interesting having that. You've got some families that just expect it of you.
Yeah.
And some families that just think, why are you wasting your life? It's just, I can't imagine what it's like to have had that encouragement to go. But some people might think it's a forced. I know some friends of my sons, and I just look at their families and I just think, oh, you know, if you didn't want to go to university, I don't know what that's going to be like. You're probably going to have the same aggro that I had. For going.
Yeah.
I suppose. Sorry. Tangent. But,
no, it's all right. I think sometimes as well, if you come from a family that are thinking, why are you doing that? There's a kind of nice feeling of, sometimes rebellion feels quite good, doesn't it? Just to go and do something and be a bit selfish and be like, actually, no, I really want to go to art school, where presumably there are a lot of similar characters there of people going, I'm just going to do my own thing.
Yeah, I think so. It makes you really sure of, if you have to fight for something, it's very different to just waltzing into it. That kind of fight for it has made me the way that I am, and it makes the art that I make, I think.
Hmm.
And I find it kind of weird when I see some... The trouble with artists... I'm going to get into trouble now. The trouble with a lot of artists is a lot of them come from really, really, really wealthy backgrounds. And, you know, Common People basically was written because that's what it's like.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of people like that. And I find that quite hard because even now kind of struggling in, and I see the ones that, yeah, that's great, you've got all that, but and you've got the contacts and you can do that.
Mm.
And art isn't about being successful in art, depending on what you define success. If you define success as getting somewhere with it and having your name known, that doesn't have anything to do with talent.
Mm.
It's got a tiny bit to do with talent, but I still think you could be pretty useless and have the right contacts and you will get somewhere.
Yeah, well, I think any aspect of art and commerce has got grey areas. It's a bit like those, what they call those diagrams where you've got the two circles and they cross over.
Venn diagram, yeah.
So, you know, you've got the bit in the middle where you've got the talented people, yeah. And then you've got bits on either side where there's a bit of smoke and mirrors, really.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that Emperor's New Clothes thing, yeah. You know, if everybody's looking at something, art is subjective and people don't always feel that they have been taught how to feel good about their natural response to something. You're sometimes thinking you've got a learned response to it too, and look at something and think, well, I think this, but then someone can go, well, actually, if you look here and there's this context, and you think, oh, okay, that's quite highbrow and I didn't get that, so I'm a bit daft, so I'll say now, oh, I can see that, and I can comprehend that this is a good piece of art. Plus, I guess, a little bit like music... You know, sometimes people say, oh, when you look back at the older days, there's so many great songs that come out of it and look at the charts now. And I'm like, yeah, but history's done us the benefit of sifting through.
Yeah.
It'll go, right, here's the 60s.
Yeah.
Sift through everything. There would have been reams of rubbish too.
Yeah.
And then you get left with the good stuff at the end. And it's a similar thing with art, isn't it?
Where you get anything kind of sort of with some sort of creativity, isn't it? I mean, like, with music, I mean, you get so much that was just manufactured. And at the time, you can criticise it, but actually you can look back and go...
Yeah.
You can have a lot of guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
From Stockcake in the Morning.
It's all coming out. So after you've done your... Has art been something that... Because I suppose we should talk about how I do know you now, which is through these amazing creations you do with, how would you call it, sort of free stitching, free embroidery?
It's free motion embroidery.
Okay.
Free embroidery. I say free embroidery and people think I'm actually just giving away a lot of work, which sometimes I do. But, but it's free motion embroidery. It's basically drawing with the sewing machine.
Okay.
So it's not all that I do, but it's the main kind of, it's an easy tool, I guess, for social media in a way, because you have to have your social media artist side and then you have to...
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not that you have lots of different... Because that's the thing I know mainly
It's mainly because that translates so well for social media, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of like that works. I do things that don't involve any stitching at all. but drawing with the sewing machine is something I love, and writing with the sewing machine, so just kind of like my thoughts. I'm dyslexic and it's almost just kind of like I feel like my thoughts can come out a lot better from my head to my hands.
Mm.
There's something that it's a little bit more connected, so I don't have... It's like it's not really happening. I can say it, and it's a bit like being possessed.
Yeah, I can understand that.
That's what, I don't know. I'm assuming that's what being possessed...
Do your eyes roll back? So when you do... But I know you're saying about the social media aspect, but it seemed, from my point of view, that for the last year... It became a really good way of getting out some of the feelings and thoughts of what's been going on.
Yeah. So for me, the beginning of lockdown, I knew I wanted to make a piece of art. I thought I knew I wanted to make a big piece of art and for me, and I wanted to do something that was obviously based around what we were going through. And I think because I had the benefit of being almost like my own personal lockdown, which was when I became disabled, and I kind of thought everybody's going to have this, everybody's going to have a feeling of, hang on a minute, I've been robbed of something. And
you thought that at the beginning of the lockdown?
Yeah, and I kind of thought this will be really interesting. So I acted really, really quickly, and I put out a call on social media, mainly on Twitter, and just said, can you send me a photo of your lockdown moment? And I thought there was going to be a lot of quite miserable stuff because a lot of people were going to be moaning about this. And actually what I got was just lovely. I had, you know, cooking with your children. I had, you know, just gardening. Really, really basic stuff that was lovely. And I started stitching them. And then I just decided, hang on a minute, we've all been, it's really corny, but we've all been connected because of this. So it's like connected by a thread. Brilliant. So I kind of drew each image that came to me and then I kept the thread going and then did the next one. So literally every picture was connected because I thought we've all been connected. And I found it a real privilege to have this little window into everybody's little moments. And some were just, I mean, my favourite one, which you couldn't make this up, was somebody that basically said that they were divorced and in lockdown there, and similar age to me, so late 40s, their boyfriend from when they were 16 got in touch and they've been Zooming and they've been together ever since.
Oh, wow.
And he'd made her a necklace and the picture was like the necklace. But I just thought, would that have happened without that kind of focus? Would that have, probably not. And I just thought it was just lovely. So these little moments are brilliant. And obviously there were so many people that had put kitchen disco in. So then that's how I reached out, you know, that's how you saw it because it was...
Yeah. He did one of Ray, my 8-year-old.
Dressed as Spider-Man with horse's head.
Yeah, halfway up the window.
Yeah. and that was obviously quite early into the discos as well because it would have been, you know, because some people when I was saying it, they were thinking, what the heck's that? Whereas now I think a lot of people would probably sort of maybe know a bit more describing it. So, yes, that was the first.
Yeah, so that's how we sort of came to know each other in this part of our lives anyway.
Yeah.
I was really struck by it and I think there's so much, I mean, obviously there's loads of talent and I can really see the way you can see the images sort of emerge out of this scribble of threads is extraordinary. And there's so much detail. So the one you delivered here is not Ray the Horse's Head one because that's part of your big piece.
Yeah.
So you did another one from the sort of last disco of the first 10.
Which I kind of was it was really lovely because I was watching it and whilst I was watching, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I just thought I wanted to kind of make a piece that was a bit of a reminder of it. So I kind of not just stitched you and however many heads there was. And some of it you can make out, some of it you can't, but also like the numbers going up.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was lovely in little quotes and bits and pieces because it really was something that it did touch an awful lot of people. It really did. I think it was a little bit of something that we all look forward to. Certain things in lockdown that a lot of people look forward to, say Kitchen Disco and Grayson's Art Club. And so, you know, the little touches that we thought they were made something because it was, you couldn't have had those things without lockdown. So it suddenly made lockdown really positive. And I think we need that. We need to kind of like separate COVID from lockdown. You can, I mean, I love lockdown. I can say it, but I think there's a point where people think you can't like that because it's been so tragic. And it's just like, you can like that time and separate it from, you know, COVID, I think.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely say the things about it that have worked for you. I think that's fine. I know what you mean. Yeah, it's definitely, I think people do need to let themselves off the hook a bit with making it sound like they're thinking pandemics are brilliant. You know, it's like definitely not that at all. It's just that if you're going to find yourself in an unexpected tilted place, it's quite good if you can draw out a few things that have brought you joy, and a lot of them are, as you say, little things, really little things.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So when you started with this lockdown piece, so this is all while you're living at home with your husband and your kids. And what does your son think of what you've created? How involved is he with what you do?
He loved it. And he's kind of like my biggest, he is my biggest cheerleader. But he's all, I mean, he's pretty much... He's kind of like my biggest muse, really, because he just comes out with stuff and it just makes me feel proud of myself that, A, that I produced that, but also just he does help with ideas. So he was really positive. So when I had moments where I just thought... I didn't think I was doing it for me, so I was just doing it. But then when it came to the end of it, I like to then just hide in the corner and not do very much. So whether it's a piece that you think you want exhibited or you want sold, I just want to make the work and I don't really want to do anything with it. But I had interest quite early on from museums about it. And I partly kind of like just wanted to hide and think, I can't do this side of it. I can't do the promotional side at all. And that's my past work. That is all, that's pretty much what I was doing. So it's just like try and grab a bit of it. And it has been bought, it's gone to the Science Museum, so it's in their permanent collection.
Amazing.
So, which is lovely, and it's really lovely that everybody took part to say, there's a little part of you that's in there, which is really nice.
That's incredible. Yeah. It's such an institution as well, the Science Museum.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's great because my commercial side of the business, of my work, which is Toby Boo, which is I do... that's when I do mainly the drawings because then they get put onto giftware for museum and heritage shops, pretty much. That obviously came to a standstill, so no money from that. So it was just kind of like, okay, my business has suddenly gone and I don't know when that's going to come back up. So to actually be able to concentrate solely on my art and make money from my art has just been like... this is exactly what I want to do. This is exactly what I want to do.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, I was wondering, when you said at the beginning that lockdown happened and it gave you this almost instinctive thing of, this is familiar to me. I had this when I had this, what sounds pretty cataclysmic time when you became disabled, lost your work. And again, with becoming a mum. So do you think part of you as well has sort of taken something from all these stories and the simplicity of what people have actually chosen to celebrate? And a way to kind of be a bit, has it sort of helped you at all, do you think, with looking back to those times? And
yeah, I think I felt it. I had enough time kind of to go through it to think I can see the positives. I can completely, I feel really lucky that I actually became ill because I'm a better person for it and I can see life completely. I probably wouldn't have my family if I didn't get ill. Because if I'm really honest, if I stayed... in my old career, which was television, the likelihood is that I would have just got so sucked in, probably wouldn't been around very much. Probably getting Toby was a 7-year struggle with IVF. Wouldn't have done any of that. That wouldn't have happened. So I can see lots of sliding door moments. And I think it has made me, I can get very miserable, but in general, trying to look at positives of every little moment, that's what being ill taught me, I think. Because you kind of have to be from... I mean, you know, I've suffered with depression and I know the signs, so I don't really I kind of dig myself out before I've managed, so far, touch wood, managed to do that. So I just think these little things that you need to sort of, the little things you need to kind of like look at and go, that's brilliant, that's wonderful, and concentrate on that.
Yeah, and I guess for Toby, he didn't really know that version of you. He's only known you since all that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's weird is now when he sort of hears about things, it's just kind of like, really? Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. You did that. That's amazing. And it's really lovely because it makes me look back and think, God, actually what I did was actually really good, and I was good at my job, and I was a part in that programme, and that was really good. Am I forgotten about it? Because then you turn into a zombie when you're a mum. And I had really bad postnatal depression, so I really was like, and my husband had postnatal depression as well. I'm off on tangents again, aren't I? And now he is now seeing little bits of me come back, I think. But it's like filtered through to something better.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's just I want to grasp that, but I don't want the really bad parts of that. I want, you know, I want some of my old life, just not the shit parts.
Well, it sounds as well like you and your husband are amazingly resilient to have been through so many different different things together like that.
I'm unbelievably lucky to have the husband that I have. He couldn't be more amazing. I mean, there isn't anything, and it sounds awful. I don't like it because it sounds like I'm really gloating. I've got the best husband. I've got the best husband. But he's just been absolutely amazing throughout. I mean, how we got through all the stuff we got through and still, you know, adore each other basically and enjoy each other's time. And you know, it's amazing because we've been married for 21 years. We've been together for, I don't know, 24 or something. Anyway.
Long time.
Yeah, it feels like a long time, doesn't it? Yeah. So I say thank you, Dave, for putting up with me. Although I probably won't let me listen to this.
I think if Richard, my husband, didn't edit my podcast, he wouldn't make it through any of them either. And I once put a message in at the end of one of my podcasts for my manager, just in case he ever heard it, to say that if he does hear it, I'll buy him whatever he wants from Amazon. He's literally, I'm still waiting, Derek. maybe Dave will listen in. I didn't realise you had 7 years waiting to have your
7 years.
Baby. That's a long time.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was hard. I kind of erased quite a lot. I've actually erased the first year of his existence anyway, because the first year was awful. Postnatal depression was horrible. Dave and I had it. He had it actually for longer. And it was, I just don't even like think about it. There was one of the things that when he did come along, tangent again, when he did come along, he cried a lot. And obviously we didn't know the reason. So one of us would have Toby, the other one would have the cat, because the cat would be crying quite a lot. So we'd literally be like this, both of us. And there were two CDs that we'd have on, and one of them was the Feeling album.
Oh, really?
And he calmed down to it. And I hadn't listened to it since, because I found it really hard. And I was explaining to him the other day about it. And I put it on and I instantly just started crying.
Aww.
Instantly I put on, you know, it was just the emotion that was still there. He's 13 and it's still, it just completely pulled. And it was a horrible time. And we were warned about it because he was IVF, because it was 7 years. They said, they did warn us and say, you are likely to have a low, because you've been wanting this for so long.
Okay.
And the one thing that we found we couldn't tell people was when we found it, hell, it was really hard because everybody around us was saying, your life must be perfect and over the moon because you've wanted this for 7 years. And then it comes along. You can't moan about it. You can't then say this is just awful, please, I can't deal, because everyone around you is so pleased for you.
Yeah, it's
so,
like the happy ending, isn't it?
Yeah, your life, this is it, this is what you've wanted. So you really, you know, it's like a kid, isn't it, getting a toy and then, well, I used to do that a lot when I was a kid anyway, but get something, I don't want it. But it was like that. And then I did find that every 6 months it got better, but that 7 year struggle, which was, we were really lucky. It was third go of IVF. We were really, 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 really lucky. Really lucky. But anybody, I just feel for them. Absolutely just feel for them, because it's just, it's a horrendous time that when I look back, kind of like the sort of, I mean, I'd lost friendships through it because I couldn't be friends with people that had kids. And I had a lot of friends at the time that had kids.
Well, this is before you had a baby, or just yeah, no.
Yeah, so when in the 7 years of trying, I couldn't be around people that had kids. And I can remember, this sounds awful, but I've spoken to some women that were in the same position, and they said exactly the same thing, that you're almost thinking, please just let me have a miscarriage, because you know then that your body can get pregnant. And that sounds awful, because you just think nobody in their right mind. But at the time, when you think this is never happening, you think, just give me a glimmer of something. Mm. Just give me a glimmer.
That's hope, I suppose.
So when, yeah, exactly. So when you've got nothing, you just think this is never going to happen. And then, the odds of something happening were so slim, because I then found out that my body was riddled with endometriosis, and I was incredibly lucky that we had him. He was emergency C-section. That's another story, because we nearly lost him. And then had to have operations afterwards to kind of sort me out.
That's all right, don't worry. It's honestly not that scattergun. I think also, this is what happened. These things are really complicated. And when you start to go back to those things, especially things you don't normally think about or talk about for a really long time, and you think, oh, golly. And what I'm hearing as well is that you had huge amounts of medical support, conversations, interventions to try and assist you to becoming parents.
Yeah.
And then there's that bit where you bring that baby home and you're saying, like, oh, now what? And it's like someone's just pulled away that safety net. And you look at other people and they're sitting there smiling with their babies and you think, how are they feeling like that? I don't think I'm in that position. I don't think I'm going to get to that place. I just feel really isolated. I think it's just a shock. It's like such a massive shock.
But it also doesn't help that so many mums, more so than dads, so many mums, there's so much lying. I mean, I went to a postnatal NHS group. I did, you know, there was like an NCT one and there was an NHS one. And the NHS one, we literally, we sat around and everybody was saying, he was 12 or 13 weeks, everybody was saying, oh, it's just amazing. But you could see in their faces, they weren't thinking that. Mm. But because one person starts saying it, and it got to me, I must have been near the end. And I just said, these are the worst weeks I've ever had. This is the worst time of my life. And the sigh from so many women was just, and then afterwards they said, thank God you said it. It's just like, but why is nobody saying it? Why does nobody say, I'm sure that there must be some people that think it's amazing, but those first 6 months, I can't for the life of me see how they're good for anyone.
I also think maybe just because it is so significantly hard for so many people, if you are one of the ones that feel lucky enough to feel like that, it's probably quite tactful to dial it down a little, actually, if you are fine. Some people, I'm sure there are people out there that just go, this is all good. But because it can knock some people sideways in such a huge way, maybe just it's not always helpful to hear that.
No, I mean, it's like, I mean, a lot of people talk about, obviously, breastfeeding anguish, which was just, I didn't have much of a choice because I could do a couple of weeks and then I had to go back on my meds. I was in a really bad way. I had to go back on my meds. And I had a letter from my professor at the hospital to say, under no circumstances should you be breastfeeding. And yet there were still people around me that were saying, that's nonsense. You should still, it was just, I mean, luckily...
So odd.
Luckily, I was strong enough to just kind of like think, I don't have a choice. I'm not bothered. I don't have an issue.
Yeah.
Some people really feel like it's... And I just kind of think, I had a go of it, it's fine. Got the general gist. but... You know, what I loved, I really loved that, you know, remember feeding him with the bottle and you could just really look at his face. And I just thought, that's just, yeah, I love that. That's really, that's lovely. I didn't have any, what's it, but I've got a lot of friends that they had problems with breastfeeding or they really felt awful because they couldn't. And I just think, I really wish that we could just take that away.
Oh, so do I.
Nobody should have any, if you want to do it, fine. If you don't want to do it, don't do it.
I agree. Well, you're not, you cannot go walk into a room full of adults and be like, I can tell from here which ones are breastfed.
It just
doesn't sustain as a bonus, does it, for life?
No. And funnily enough, actually, out of all my friends, Toby's the only one that wasn't. And he's the only one that out of a lot of them when they were babies didn't have any allergies.
There you go.
Make of that what you will.
So were you using your art at any point to get through these events?
All the time. It was just different kind of ways. So just before he was born, when did I do the course? So what happened was when I first got ill, that's when I did an adult education course in free embroidery or embroidery. That's when I learned it. Amazing women that were just incredible. I learned loads of... Well, no, they tried to teach me loads of techniques, which I couldn't do, so I had to make up my own. that was the only trouble. I tried to do what they did. They did really neat, amazing work, and I was thinking, I can't do that.
So where does free embroidery come from, and what were they doing with it then?
Just making... I think it might have been a part of it, or whether it was just an embroidery course, because there was hand embroidery, which I can't do.
But is free embroidery sometimes used?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, it's probably been going as long as you could take the thing off a sewing machine and you could do it. I don't think there's definitely nothing new about it. There has been a surge now where there's an awful lot of people doing it, but it's a little bit like saying, when people say, oh, they do the same as you, it's like saying to a painter, oh, that's, you know, it's just
I've seen someone else using brushes, by the way.
Or the other person, they sing. it's kind of a weird one. It was probably a bit less used, but now it's just used quite a lot. And it just happens to be the medium that I like because of the speed of it. It can kind of keep up with my brain.
And do you find that better than just doing it, like if you were doing like a
hate
free... with a pencil.
Because I'm thinking. If I've got a pen or a pencil, it's almost like I'm thinking. With the machine, I feel like it's just coming straight out. So there's a lot more interesting... there's a lot more kind of interesting stuff that comes when I stitch rather than I think. So when I've got anything,
I wonder why it's different for you with the pencil, because you'd think that would be a similar extension.
I suppose so, but there's something that I'm actually conscious of it. So you're editing it and you're thinking, I can't say that. Whereas I've got a lot of pictures with text, and the text really does come from here. Really does come from my heart, because it literally just spills out. But I couldn't do that with a pen or a pencil.
Do you think as well it's a bit more adrenalized because you've got the actual sort of sensation?
You have to keep moving the machine.
You have
to keep moving. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's you don't have time to think. Whereas when you've got a pencil in your hand, you're thinking, pause.
Exactly. The pace is different, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have to move.
And it's quiet with a pencil as well. So it's a bit more, maybe a bit more sort of reflective.
Yeah.
Introspective, whereas with the machine, it's like it sort of feels like a real forward motion.
It is. It's kind of like you're in a car, you have to go or something. I don't know. I don't drive, so I don't know.
And that is how cars go, don't worry.
That's what they get. That's what they do, isn't it? I don't know. No, you can stay still with the car. It doesn't make any sense. It's like a wind up car that when you wind it up, you can kind of hold it back, but it does need to go off.
Yeah,
that makes a lot more sense.
Okay. Yeah, I know that feeling, that tension. It's gonna go. It's gonna go.
Yeah. Yeah, those ones, pullback ones. Yeah, them. I don't know, pullback cars. So it's kind of weird. I've kind of gone back to painting it. I haven't painted for years, and then Dave bought me some oil. He bought me oil paints for around Christmas, and I was thinking, I really don't want to use oil paints. But I've actually really enjoyed painting, and then now I'm combining the two, and just experimenting and stuff. So, yeah.
And when, just to go back to the sort of motherhood bit, when you've spent that long just wanting to have a baby,
yeah,
did you have, has it surprised you what kind of mother you turned out to be, or do you think that it kind of is pretty much what you imagined on the other side?
I did. You know what, it's really weird. I'm not sure I did imagine what I'd be like. My biggest thing was, I don't want to be like my mum. And sometimes when you've got a really awful relationship with your parent, especially your mother, I think it actually helps probably more so than having a really good one, because I haven't got that feeling of I want to be like them, which I've got a lot of friends that they love their mum so much and they just really want to be like that. Whereas to me, I just think I just need to be the complete opposite, and hopefully that will hopefully that'll help. So I just want to, as far as I'm concerned, I just really want to be there for him. My sister said one thing when he was really little, and she said, you've got four years, and once they go off to school, that's it. You've got those 4 years. Mm. And I kind of didn't really get it.
And years what, in terms of just that's the time?
In terms of having that time with them, in terms of really having something.
Stark.
It is, but I kind of get it. I do get what she means. I wasn't in a position to go back to work anyway.
Mm.
My mum went back to work when I was 3 months, because she had to. We've never...
Did mum have quite a traditional job?
She was a secretary. So, and that was kind of everything to her. And I'm not saying, if you're working, you can't. I know plenty of friends that work and have a bond with their children, but it's not automatic. You have to work at it. You don't automatically have something with your child. You do have to work for it. And I learned a lot from having a mum that wasn't what anybody should have, I suppose. And she didn't have a great time of it either, so it kind of like goes on. I had a fantastic relationship with my dad, but he passed away 4 years ago, and I would like to pick up traits from him. But yeah, I knew how not to do it. I can remember back, and I think the thing is that sometimes when you become a parent and everybody's there to give you advice, you don't need advice, because you don't need to have had a child to be a parent. You need to remember what it was like for you.
Mm.
And that's what people don't do. They're so busy thinking about this one's doing it this way. They're not thinking, hang on a minute, I was a child. What was it like?
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I find the schools thing is ridiculous when people kind of go a bit bonkers about schools, and you just think, can you not look back at your life and realise, was school the be-all and end-all?
Mm.
Does it really matter? I just think people are a bit nuts for not looking back at their own life.
No, that's actually a really, really good point. I think it sort of probably goes back to that feeling in the NCT group of the sort of comparison thing. I'm just thinking, what stage should I be up to? What are my peers doing? How am I doing this? And, oh, I've screwed that up and I'm going to do that. And also, I suppose, parenting, where the emphasis is and how we talk about it and what's discussed, that shifts over the years as well, generationally.
Yeah.
The things we're being encouraged to think about and how we're encouraged to raise our kids, and the generation gap is different to how it was with our parents, very different to how it was with theirs.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, smaller over the years. But so I think you're right there. We've all been the small person working out what was really good for us and what wasn't. And actually, I think that what you said is really, really special when you're saying about if you have a parent that doesn't leave you that map of like, oh, I want to be just like my mum. I really like the way you flipped it and said it actually was made it so that all I had to do was be different, and I was doing what felt right. And actually there is a pressure, isn't there, if you've got parents who you think have done a brilliant job and you think, okay, all I need to do is get that right. And obviously you've blocked out loads of bits where you probably you know, didn't get on with your mum or didn't get on with your dad, or this went wrong, or they...
It's just rose tinted. I can see that there's... I've got quite a few friends I can sort of see that almost like rose tinted glasses.
Mm.
And they're not just... you know, they're trying to do that. Whereas, yeah, I do. It's, again, it's that whole thing of trying to see a benefit to something that wasn't that great.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the whole thing of kind of... Parenting is just... It's not parenting. Motherhood is just... It is grim. The whole, it drives me nuts, parents, you know, kind of doing that comparison thing.
Mm.
And having a child that was, from very early on, we knew, so Toby's got a very high IQ and a very high EQ, which is emotional intelligence. So, and that's actually kind of, it's kind of worse in a way because they're really aware of stuff. And so he did his GCSE maths when he was 8, I think, the first time. He really wanted to do it. He really wanted to do it. And
amazing.
When he was 6, he really wanted to do it. And we said, don't be so ridiculous, don't be so ridiculous. And then we got help for him and they said, just let him do it. And I kind of wasn't sure. But afterwards, seeing his face when he came out, his smile, he was just, and he hugged me and just said, thank you for letting me do it. It was just worth everything. And then he wanted to do his A-level maths. He asked for it for his birthday and Christmas present. Because it's not through school.
This is
because
amazing.
Because it's not through school. Because it's kind of like you obviously have to pay for it. And so I said, it's 300 quid. And he said, well, can I have it for my birthday and Christmas? And I said, if you choose it, there's not going to be something else. Because I just thought, are you really sure you want to do it? Because I don't think school are going to be overly happy with it, blah, blah, blah. And then we did it. We thought, okay, this is what he wants. So he wanted it, he did it, and he got an A.
And that was when he was like 12?
That was.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So for me, I always find it really weird thinking no two kids are the same.
Mm.
And to every child has got something they're passionate. Every child has got their own interests. So why parents have this thing of trying to compare academics, I find is ridiculous. I just find it absolute nonsense. Concentrate on your kids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I find the idea of tutoring a bit mad, but Toby does tutor.
Can I just say, though, if you're in a conversation with other parents and they're comparing and you casually mention, yes, I have a child with high IQ, and then you drop in that they just got an A in their maths A level at 12, I think they will probably shut up after that, the other parents.
Yeah, but this is the thing.
It's like, it's a pretty big
thing. But what kind of bugs me is that with academics, they put this thing on, but I just think there is so much stuff that kids do that is amazing that, we probably wouldn't have done. You know, like yours making, filmmaking and stuff like that, that's incredible. You know, they're tiny. 13 is tiny. So all of those things, I just think is just like, wow, you can do that. There's nothing that's better than whatever. I would not wish a high IQ child on anyone.
Yeah, I
really wouldn't. And I think probably if he could have it taken away, he probably would, because it's caused him an awful lot.
Does he find it quite isolating at school sometimes?
Yeah. He does. He's got a really lovely group of friends at school.
Well, that's great.
Which is very sweet. And I'm really, that never take for granted, because kids don't automatically have.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily always happen.
No.
So I'm really grateful for that. But it just means that he just gets things a lot quicker. So in school, there's an awful lot of repetitiveness and stuff. And I think he finds that quite frustrating. And I think also because people don't understand this is just him.
Yeah.
You know, there is an awful lot of branding of, well, you must be a pushy mum. And because I'm brown, there's a kind of stereotype of, well, it must be you. Because it's never Dave, it's always me. and it's just, I think because people are thinking about, well, we haven't met a child like this, therefore they can't exist. And it's just like, kids are just individuals. Just accept. You just have to accept what they say and what they're like. Because you can't just accept it. I mean, this goes along with anything, with so many things. I just find it really funny that adults sometimes pick and choose what when they decide to listen to kids.
Mm.
You know, you have to just listen to them. You can't just listen to them over certain things and then just ignore them for the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, his passion is crazy maths.
Yeah, I think also anyone would only speak to you for a few minutes to understand that it completely can come from him, and I don't get the impression you're there going, come on, let's do this math thing. And I think it's interesting because, funnily enough, I was talking about this with my 8-year-old on the way in today, because he was saying, I'm not really enjoying school at the moment. And I was saying, well, the thing is that it's sort of set up for like the the 70% or whatever who learn in quite that conventional way. And then you've got 30% probably, maybe more actually, that don't feel like that, and they've never felt like that, and they never really will. And for them, you just got to kind of keep them going. Obviously, you've got the more typical ways that might happen, like if they struggle, like if they are dyslexic or if they have issues with math or something. But then the other side of the coin, the kids actually are sort of feeling things.
They're
in the,
here.
Yeah,
you're just dealing with the middle. You're not dealing with here and here.
And you're so encouraged when you're at school. Do you remember what it was like? Oh, my goodness, that feeling of just not wanting anything to stick out, nothing to be different, nothing to give you that any sort of unwanted notoriety of anything, really.
Yeah.
It's you never really have another experience like that in life in that way, where you just have to get on with it and every day go back in, see those same people, do that same stuff.
No, I mean, why anybody would ever want to repeat that?
I know.
I don't know. I mean, I've erased quite a bit of it because I didn't have an awful time at school. I just found it was just a means to an end, wasn't it? You just did it. And I was useless at school. I was absolutely useless at school. I literally just kind of thought, I really like art. I'll do art. What do I need? Oh, okay, so I do a foundation. What do I need to do a foundation? You have to have an A-level. All right, then. So I'll do an A-level, but you had to do two A-levels. So I did A-level art, and then I just kept swapping about when I was in the sixth form and obviously failed the other A-level because I was useless. But I'm grateful. I didn't see it at the time. I just felt completely thick. I look back and I just think I should have been grateful for the fact that I had a passion for art. I should have just been, if I could tell myself anything, it's just enjoy that. You've got a passion for that. Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what you're doing with Toby, isn't it? Saying, okay,
yeah,
that's the thing you care about.
Everyone has got a passion for something. And some people, it just takes them a little bit longer to find. But what parents shouldn't do is prioritise and think academics is above anything.
No.
And so many of them do.
Yeah, but also we've got hoops that they're supposed to jump through before they can leave school. Like my eldest struggles with maths and...
Did you want a tutor?
Oh, well, so he has something called dyscalculia, which I've talked about before.
Yeah,
so it's,
like
it's a bit like dyslexia, but with numbers.
Yeah.
So he has a special tutor called Adrian, who's been amazing. And sometimes it's about getting that little team of people around them.
Yeah.
But I think if I could have put as many hours and conversations into the thing Sonny adores... It would have been lovely. But because he has to leave...
You have to do that, don't
the
you?
GCSE maths and GCSE English. I've spent, so many hours, extra time on something he doesn't really enjoy and doesn't come naturally. It's an awkward system, and I would like to... If I could shift one thing, it would be not having to have that diktat of that people having to have the maths and the English when they leave.
Well, I really don't understand that. And I'm hoping that maybe what lockdown's done is maybe that we might have a shift and not have GCSEs, which would make...
Oh, wouldn't
sense.
That be great?
I mean, no GC. I mean, I've got a child that loves exams all round, but I think GCSEs are really quite pointless. I think if you have some sort of monitoring to say you've done this, great, and then anything you're passionate with, you do A-levels. But I just think this kind of force, the whole GCSE thing, I think is just crazy. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. I can say this because I did so badly in my GCSEs. It's a lot easier, but... Again, that's the thing about parenting is you've got to just look back at your life and you've got to think, how are you and did that affect? But I think I hear now that if you want to do an art foundation, I think somebody said you had to have, maths and English GCSE. And it's just like, why though?
Yeah, why?
Why?
Yeah.
I mean, I would be really surprised when it comes to art. If you show me a non-dyslexic artist, I'd be quite amazed, to be honest. I don't think that they, if you're any good, I don't think they exist. Because I just think there is always something. I just think maybe it's just undiscovered. And also I think people don't understand what dyslexia is. They think, but I can read and write, and isn't it about that? And then they don't realise.
Yeah, it's processing.
I think that's the other thing, is that they don't get that. So, yeah, I'm with you. Let's drop GCSEs.
Yeah. And just to touch on, so we talked about dyslexia, which is obviously sort of unseen... different way of learning, but you've also talked about disability. How does that affect things when you're a parent? Is that something that you feel is...
Well, it's interesting. My sister she's disabled. She got ill when she was 16, 17, and she was bedbound. Again, I learned an awful lot of her. She had her first when she was 21. She was told she couldn't have kids. She had her first when she was 21, and I watched her, and she was she was amazing. And actually the hormones in pregnancy kind of helped her. And I could see how different her kids were with her. And then I saw, so with Toby, he was really different with me than he was with...
get off, Toby.
With,
cat on the table.
With Dave. So he used to, things like when I carried him, he kind of did monkey grip, which was, he knew that he had to cling onto me rather than me. You know, my arms were quite bad. So he did monkey grip on me, never did it with Dave. When he was out with me, he would, I never had a child that would just wander off or did whatever. When I see kids that just go off and play, I just think, I don't know what that feels like.
Mm.
Because he nearly would always stay near me, unless there were others. He'd always kind of stay with me. And I was on a med for my fibromyalgia that I'm not on anymore, but one of the side effects was narcolepsy, which is randomly falling asleep.
Yeah.
And when he was little and he was in the pram, I had that. And there were times when I would be pushing the buggy and I'd fall asleep.
Oh, wow.
There were times when I can remember being in one park and I kind of like just woke up and I'd obviously just... It was really dangerous. So I'm quite grateful that he learned to stay with me. But he wasn't like that. He wasn't like that. So he did know from an early age, but my sister's kids were the same.
Mm.
They just acted differently with her because they knew from an early age that they kind of had to.
Mm.
So it's fascinating seeing just how much they take to situations.
Yeah, you know, that is amazing.
Just completely... Yeah, it's amazing how much they just know from really early, because that was obviously before he was one.
And I suppose you just know the things you know if you're not, he hasn't got anything to compare it to, so...
No, that's it. There must be something.
So you're communicating.
Yeah, yeah. So it has been... It was just quite difficult because kind of mobility and stuff was quite tricky. I had access to this sort of system Dial-A-Ride, which was accessibility, which is brilliant because... It meant that I could do the embroidery course and, you know, stuff like that, which is great. So there was some bits around, but I think when I was with other people, you kind of try and pretend that everything's all right.
Mm.
And because you look fine, I think people don't, obviously, even now, I think I've got friends that probably think if I haven't got my walking stick, they probably think I'm fine. It's just like, no, I just don't want to use a walking stick. But the pain's there.
And this is all to do with the fibromyalgia.
Yeah, so it was that, and it was the endometriosis. The endometriosis, even though... I had a hysterectomy and everything out 3 years ago. Still seems to be affecting me.
Oh, blimey.
So even though everything's been taken out, it's just like, why are you still affecting me? Which is a bit weird, yeah. Tangents again, too many.
No, you've got a lot of things to talk about. I mean, it's funny because you're one of only two people who've said to me, you should interview me. And both of you are artists, which I think is quite funny.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
But you weren't lying. I mean, there's lots of things you've experienced. And without being too corny, I think the machine and the free embroidery is quite a good metaphor for how you've had to react and keep going with lots and lots of different things happening.
Yeah.
So it does kind of suit you that's something that you're up to.
No, you're absolutely right. It's just kind of, it is weird. I never sort of like really kind of thought about it, but the machine is pretty much, you just have to keep going. But it's going this way and this way.
But now, you know, because I know it was well back, you messaged me saying that you were listening to the podcast and it made you quite sad about the job you used to have.
Yeah.
But do you think that there's elements of what you used to do that you can still incorporate in what you do now?
I'm getting there.
Mm.
Lockdown has... I think this is one thing that I've got from lockdown, actually, is remembering that person and trying to take... I never would have just kind of like said, when you put out things saying, what guess? I never would have said, yeah, go on, then me.
I like it.
If it wasn't, I don't know. If you ask me now, I probably wouldn't do it. It just so happened to be I was reflecting quite a lot and I was thinking, well, hang on a minute. No, just put yourself forward. Just try this, just try this. And I'm trying to do more of that rather than hide under the duvet.
Well,
like hiding under the duvet.
Yes. But is there something specific you think that would be important to you to put down on record? I mean, is there someone you're sort of imagining the other end listening.
No, I think what I like about the podcast that I've been listening to, I just think yours in particular, is when you listen to something and you can kind of, it does go, oh God, yes, that's how I felt. That's kind of, you know, that there's somebody out there that, it just, when something just kind of hits a feeling, it's interesting to hear about other people. I just think it's when you've got, it's the connection.
Mm.
And this sounds really corny, but it's just pretty much through lockdown, that's what I have felt everybody's had, is connections, and realizing that connections are everything.
Yes.
You can be in isolation, but you have those, and for me, it's almost like a visual, I see threads everywhere. And I think it's kind of, I've gone off on a tangent. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, the connection. I think what I'm getting from what you're saying is that the lockdown has, you're right, completely, exaggerated how vital it is for us to feel those connections with people, but also to sort of look at the simplicity of things. And certainly from my point of view, over the last year, I feel like I've made so many more friends, and there are people that I've made little connections with.
Yeah.
And a lot of that sort of pretense has just sort of dropped down. Oh my goodness, this cat. This is Titus. He's very annoying. And I think, you know, I was saying it to a friend the other day, I feel like so many of those little roles we normally play in society about, you know, if you go into a shop and, okay, I'm playing the customer and you are the person, the shop assistant. And now if you go in, people chat, they'll be like, oh, the weather's nice. Or they'll be like, oh, how is your lockdown? We've suddenly got this huge icebreaker.
Yeah.
And then you're just two people doing what they do.
Yeah.
And having those exchanges, and I think it's really nice.
It is really nice. And I think the old me, which is the part of me that I don't want, is because I was great at my job, but I wasn't very good at myself. And I can remember having those connections, and you know, you kind of, you're really friendly with presenters and stuff. You really kind of like have that. They're work friends. But I almost felt like when I wasn't working, I just thought, well, they don't want to know me now because I'm not working. And I just thought, well, you know, not going to keep in touch. And that feeling of why would they want to know me? I felt completely worthless. Mm. I felt completely, okay, I'm only worth something if I'm working on that. We've got a link.
Mm.
And now I just kind of like think, it's ridiculous that I thought like that. So I do feel better about myself, definitely. But I kind of, there's a lot of things that I just think not everything is sort of superficial, I guess. But I felt that, I really felt, oh, I can't, you know, I wish I kept in touch. There's a lot of people I wish I kept in touch with, but I just thought, well, they're not going to want to know me now. Especially as I'm not working, oh, they don't want to know me now, I'm working TV, nobody's going to want to know who I am. And then friends find you really boring because you don't have interesting stories.
Mm. That sort of comes from that feeling of that, that's basically sort of describing of insecurity as well, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I felt like I was defined by what I did.
Yeah.
I felt like that was me, but it took a good 10 years
for
me to get out of that. That's a long time to kind of like realise, hang on a minute, that it shouldn't have taken that long.
Yeah, but you also had to deal with an unwanted change in circumstance, and that's a pretty big deal. But I like what you said about when you get to know yourself better than ever when you become a parent, even though you had that bit at the beginning where you felt completely blank again.
Yeah.
But now, through all of that, I'm just hearing lots of really nice things about where you're at now in terms of your husband and your son and the work you're doing and how much you're getting from that again. And
I'm unbelievably lucky, but there is an element of imposter syndrome there because I'm just thinking watch the cats. And I think I do feel lucky, and I shouldn't say lucky, I should think we work for this. And there's a lot of things that as a family we don't have, but it's really lovely to look at, you know, we don't have a huge house in an amazing area and the rest of it, blah, blah, blah. But we're lucky we're near lots of green spaces and we can get out really easily. And our neighbours are amazing. I mean, our neighbours are just, I mean, through lockdown to have those friendships with neighbours was just, that's priceless to me. That's just priceless. And I feel so blessed to have what I have. And things aren't, you know, my son's gone, he's going through an awful lot. And, you know, it's hard to watch him go through that. And it's hard. That's the only thing, is it's hard when you know that there's nothing you can do. I think as a parent or as an adult, when you watch a kid that's going through something, you think, I want to be able to help. And I can't. And
you mean, like, in terms of like adolescence?
Lots of things. Lots of kind of like different things. And it's tough because you do just want to, do everything, don't you? I think that's the whole thing about
the teenage thing, isn't it? You've just got to leave the door open so they chat to you. But
that's the other thing. I'm incredibly lucky that mine chats to me a lot. Probably because he's an only child, maybe, I don't know. So I kind of get the lowdown on some people. You know, at that age, so many parents just have no clue what's going on. It's just like, well, I can tell you because
I've had
the lowdown on everything.
It's probably not only child, but I think it's probably just a testament to how your relationship is, really. I think that's maybe. Just really, really nice.
Maybe, yeah. Super lucky. So I'm really lucky. I'm really grateful for all of it.
When is your piece going to be in the Science Museum? When can we see it?
They've got it. I don't know when it's going to be up. So people are kind of like, I think it's going to be a good few years. I think with the museums now, they're all working on COVID stuff, but yeah. It's like anything. It's just they were also working on a lot of other stuff.
Okay.
So we don't know when that's...
You have to let me know when it's
happening. We don't know when that's going to be up. But it's exciting that it's in their permanent collection. I never thought that would happen when I first made it. I thought, yes, I want to get this exhibited. And it made me... When I was working on it, it made me realise why I make the art I make. And it's very different to how I was making it before. I'm genuinely making it for those connections. I want people to see it. I want their reaction, whatever it is. It's not, I want to just make this and I want to sell it and I want to have it in somebody's home. I want that something back. And I don't think I really realised that before. So it's amazing having that sudden, oh my gosh, I see the light now.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, that's a good point to end on. And now I'm going to make another cup of tea so you don't think I'm aloof anymore. Well, I'm now in a slightly less windy spot. I'm in my own garden. Rich has got the radio on, so if there's anyone to blame for the noise, quite frankly, it's him, not me. Do you know, it's funny, ages ago I did a radio show, maybe I told you this already, I can't remember, and the radio presenter said that she thought I had, what was it called? She basically said, basically she said, I don't really say am and and I do, I say it all the time, and now I'm really aware of it, I'm aware of every time I say am to you. What was the word she said? It was not hyper frequency, that can't be right, what does that even mean? Oh, I'm going to shut up now. This is what happens when you get to the end of 30 episodes of amazing women to talk to. You run out of words yourself. What a pathetic end to the podcast series. I'm not really going to end that way, am I? I'm not. I'm feeling really good about life. I'm very excited. I feel like this third series has been glorious. I've been incredibly privileged and excited by all the people who've said yes to me. And every time I think... Well, you know, is there more? Are there more conversations out there? The answer is yes, of course there blimmin' is. There's hundreds of people to talk to. I'm so excited. I've got an amazing one under my belt already for next series and an amazing list of women who've said yes. And I think you're going to love it. What a lovely adventure. So I'll see you in about... Well, I say it's basically a month, but it might be a bit longer depending on how long it takes me to get my eggs in a line or whatever, the ducklings in order, whatever the phrase is. Wow, I am really firing on all cylinders today. But mainly thank you to Richard Jones, my lovely husband, for editing all the podcasts. Thank you to Claire Jones, not related, but I wish she was. She's gorgeous, my lovely producer and friend, who has been my companion throughout all of this, and it wouldn't happen without either of those two. Thank you to Acast for supporting me with all the things I'm doing. What a jammy job, eh? And thank you mainly to you for your suggestions, but mainly your ears. I'll see you in a little bit. Have a lovely May. See you in June. Lots and lots of love.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are...
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.